From NPR, this is special coverage of the Great American Eclipse of 2017. I'm Meghna Chakravarti.
I'm Robin Young, and millions of people have gathered across a swath of the U.S. from Oregon to South Carolina to get as close as possible to the path of totality of this solar eclipse. And by the way, partial eclipses are happening everywhere across the country.
Right.
Every part of the U.S. has at least a partial eclipse, so get out and safely look at those. But the path of totality is racing toward the Kansas City suburb of Parkville, Missouri. Laura Spencer is there from KCU. You are. Laura, what's happening? What are you seeing?
Well, it has certainly gotten darker here in the last few minutes. Unfortunately, there's cloud cover, and so you can see just a little sliver of the moon. So there are about two dozen students who are right next to us. We're right outside of a coffee shop, so there have been groans and cheers as see the moon.
That's some cheers.
Yeah, everybody has glasses on, but it's certainly gotten dark.
You are about 30 seconds away by our calculations.
Right.
You meant sliver of the sun, right? There's a tiny sliver of the sun?
That's right, sliver of the sun.
Because I thought, you're really having an interesting time there.
That's right.
You're on the campus of Park University, private university on the banks of the Missouri River there, a suburb of Kansas City. But let us listen. Can you put your phone out? Oh, they heard birds. Here he comes. Let's see what they say. By the way, this is live, so I wonder what we might hear. Okay, so you just went into totality. Are we assuming that because of the cloud cover, maybe you couldn't see it that well, or?
That's right. It's dark. I mean, there's a little bit kind of blue sky in the distance, but you can right now, not really see because of the cloud cover.
I'm so sorry.
Unfortunately, I know. And it was this morning. It was cloudy. There was thunder, and then it became clear.
Oh wait.
So
maybe
there's
something.
Maybe just a little bit. I can't actually see from my vantage point.
Oh, well, get over there.
So I'm going to.
Look, we know there was a watch party. Are you at Julian Field or?
We are not at Julian Field. We are outside of what was a Carnegie Library that's been converted into classroom space and a cafe. And so it's a kind of a gathering area for students.
Because I love there was a hashtag, total eclipse of the park, which I
right.
love. But so this was muted, but are you feeling the temperature drop and some of the other things that we've been hearing across the country?
Yes. Yeah. It's been a really muggy day, and it was about 82, and the temperature's dropped at least, 4 degrees in the last few minutes. I'm not really noticing any... the insects, we have cicadas this time of year. They've gone quiet, and there were some crickets, but I don't hear that right now. And I don't know if it's because we have so many students who are kind of talking and cheering.
Well, stay there, because we heard from Leslie McClurg from KQED that there can be this weird...
Microclimates
and parting of the clouds, and you are still in totality for a couple more minutes, so... Hoping you get more of a glimpse. Laura Spencer there with KCUR.
That's right.
Thank you. Oops, go ahead.
I have some students here if you have another minute.
Absolutely.
A woman, Annalie Dolman, and she grew up in South Australia. So this is actually her second time to view an eclipse. When she was a child, she saw one, and so this is a second time
Annalie,
for her.
Oh, Annalie, put her on.
Okay, she's right here.
Hi, how are you guys going?
Well, we're good, but
How are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
Well, you've seen one before, and we understand when you see one before, there's almost an addiction, a need to sort of see it again. And here you had total eclipse of the eclipse by by the clouds there. How much of a letdown is it since you knew how much of an awesome thing it could have been?
So when the last time I saw one was in 2002, we had one in December, and I was in third grade at that time. So coming over here, being a lot older, the experience was a lot more informative. I knew what was going on a lot better than I did when I was younger. But I do see a lot of people will be upset with the lack of seeing the eclipse today. So I'm hoping that it all opens up and they'll be able to see it. But unfortunately right now, it's just a lot of cloud coverage. Mm. So
Let me tell you, you still are having the camaraderie that many other people in the country would love to have of everybody who's come. Look at you from Australia, was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm from Adelaide, South Australia.
Yeah. So have a wonderful day. And
thank you.
And thank Laura Spencer there from KCUR.
You're welcome.
As we bring in NPR science correspondent Joe Palca, Joe, we've been talking to you throughout the day. We were told this might happen. There might be cloud cover in some places.
Oh, yeah.
And there has been.
Well, you know, it happens. I mean, it's only so much you can expect in parts of the country, you know, clouds
from the universe.
In.
The universe is saying, I'm only one universe.
You know what? You know what was going to be really spectacular? You know David Baron, right?
Right.
He's
a science
correspondent. Mm-hmm. So he's become an eclipse chaser. He's one of these guys that... And one of the things he was describing, which would be amazing to see, is if you get up on top of a mountain and you look to the west, you can see the shadow coming across the plains towards you.
Wow.
And that must be an amazing sight. Of course, they're not going to see that in Kansas City because, A, it's raining, and, B, it's flat.
David Baron is the one who says, and I just want people to hear this, do not take pictures. First of all, you can ruin your phone or your camera if you don't have the right filtering, and you can still hurt your eyes if you don't have the right filtering using a camera. But he says, use your smartphone afterwards to take the pictures of the faces of the people you're with.
Yeah.
Because you'll see the eclipse in your memory. You cannot reproduce it, and you will see it in their faces. I thought that was wonderful advice from him.
Yeah.
No, he really nails it with this. He's gotten very enthusiastic. You know, he's got a book about eclipses. It does. I mean, you know, David's a very down to earth guy and very thoughtful and scientific, and he's gone gaga.
Yeah,
I think that's the technical phrase.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so we were talking about cloud cover in Missouri a minute ago, but let's not forget Oregon, Idaho, the Mountain West. They had clear skies. We heard sounds of people. We heard people live on the air with us, unable to speak. They were so in awe of what they saw.
Well, you know, I've heard that it's like that, and supposedly the weather is going to clear up as you proceed east. Last I heard, Tennessee was in pretty good shape, Kentucky. And again, yes, the chances are you can wait, and maybe the clouds will part where you happen to be if you're not in sunny skies now.
And we're going to go there to Nashville and other areas in the totality. It's a beautiful ribbon that goes really across the country through several states. But then don't forget, it expands out. There's 90% totality just above and below the ribbon of totality. And then other places, 65, 80. But just stay there for a second. We want to bring in Jeff Brumfield. He's been guiding NPR's coverage of this event. We are going to be here till the very end. We were there at the very beginning. Jeff, give us a sense of some of the research that's going on around this.
Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting science going on. The main thing that you can see when there's a total eclipse is what they call the inner corona of the sun. And that's the sort of inner edge of this gas filaments that come out of the sun. It's very, very hard to observe at any time except an eclipse. And it's important because it determines a lot of space weather. The sun sends out particles, charged particles, that can affect things like satellites, even the power grid here on Earth. And so scientists still use eclipses even today to study that part of the sun. Of course, they've been studying eclipses for hundreds of years, and people have been looking at them for thousands of years, so we've learned quite a bit from them.
Jeff and Joe, hang on here for just a second, because I want to turn to Jim Green. He's already witnessed totality in Idaho Falls, Iowa. He is the director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA. Jim Green, a little earlier in our special coverage, I was complaining about NASA TV not being able to load on my computer, but all is forgiven because NASA just tweeted out absolutely stunning picture of a part of the moon starting to move in front of the sun, and you see the image of the International Space Station transiting across the sun. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, what kind of moment is this for NASA?
Well, you know, for the scientists of NASA, we've been really busy. We've gotten together a whole series of experiments, from testing instruments and, as was mentioned earlier on your program, looking at the corona and learning new things. But we launched 57 balloons along this eclipse path. And even here in Idaho Falls, out at the airport, one of the balloons was launched. And on 30 of them, we have little coupons of bacteria. It's a penicillin. It's a very hardy little guy, and it's going to go in the balloon. Now, the balloons will go up to about 100,000 feet. That's above the ozone. That's at the temperature and pressure of Mars. And because it's above the ozone, it also gets the ultraviolet light that is exposed on Mars. When the balloon goes higher, it'll pop. We're going to retrieve that coupon, marry it with a control coupon that we kept here on Earth for each one of these balloons, and then we're going to find out how many of them survived.
And you can only do this during an eclipse? What's the difference?
Well, during the eclipse, it blocks out some of the ultraviolet light.
Uh-huh.
It's about the same amount of ultraviolet light that gets to the surface of Mars. So the eclipse provides us just the right environment, and the height of the balloon with the pressure and the temperature also contribute to the survivability of these bacteria.
Jim, we have just a couple of minutes before we're going to take a break. I just want to ask, what might we learn about, for instance, climate change? Because the moon is directed by the tides, and we have, you know—
The moon directs the tides.
Directs the tides, yes, thank you. And we have all of that changing.
Well, you know, from a planetary science perspective, the climate has done nothing but change, okay? And it's going to continue to do that. We see that on Mars. We see that on Venus. In fact, we're so lucky to be able to have those terrestrial planets pretty much in the same region of the solar system as we are. So by studying them, we actually get a better appreciation for the changes in our own climate over time.
Mm. Now, so you're launching balloons into the upper atmosphere, but did you take a break, a moment to pause to see totality?
Well, I let another team launch the balloon,
okay,
because this was my first eclipse, and I wasn't going to fritter it away by doing things other than watching.
What was it like?
Well, it was pretty spectacular. Let me tell you, the weather report here in Idaho Falls was not a cloud in the sky and a brief period of darkness. And let me tell you, when that happened, the planets popped out. We saw the ray structure of the corona better than you can get by even taking pictures of it, because your eye has such a better range. It was really quite the moment. In fact, the temperature, they say it dropped 20 degrees. We brought in this big thermometer, and we had somebody monitoring that. But, you know, it was just spectacular. Looking at the leaves and things, we could even see the shadows and the peculiar shapes of
wonderful.
The crystals. It was wonderful.
Jim Green of the Planetary Science Division at NASA got to tell us about eclipses and got to see one. Jim, thank you.
My pleasure.
We also want to thank
future Jim Greens today watching.
Yeah, I know. We want to thank NPR science correspondent Joe Palca. Joe, thanks to you.
Yep. Great to be here.
And Jeff Brumfield will stay with us. NPR special coverage of the solar eclipse.
From NPR, this is the special coverage of the total solar eclipse. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Robin Young. And totality is making its way across the U.S., and we've been stalking it. And we want to go to Carbondale, Illinois now. Jennifer Fuller, WSIU, I hear something. Are you in totality?
We have just entered totality, and the crowd that you're hearing is a little disappointed because a cloud just moved over the sun.
But you were clear 30 seconds ago.
It was. We were just looking at a sliver, and a cloud moved over, so we're really hopeful that it's going to make its way out of the way so that we can actually see everything that goes along with this. But you can see along the horizon, just as we were told, that it looks like sunset.
Yeah.
360 degrees around us.
Yes.
And it's dark.
Well, as we heard earlier today, the Arapaho Indians, you should do as they did, shoot arrows at it, and maybe you can make that cloud move over. But
bang pots and pans, whatever it takes.
So what's the scene there in Carbondale?
Well, as you're probably aware, we have a university here, and so we've invited people from all over the world to be here. NASA is here. Carbondale is the point of longest totality across the nation. So we've got 2.5 minutes that we will be in darkness.
We are willing those clouds to move away in those 2.5 minutes.
And I have to say that they've got to be getting close because it's been moving for what feels like forever.
We have a
stadium full of people, and they're all just waiting patiently for these clouds to move.
I think something like 70,000, and you only have maybe 26,000 in that city. So waiting for the cloud to move, but are you feeling or hearing some of the other things that we've been hearing across the country? What's happening?
The clouds are starting to move, so we're getting hopeful that we're going to see something here pretty soon. And I did notice that the wind got still. It was breezy here for a while, and then all of a sudden it's still. Someone saw something, but I'm not seeing it yet. I see light coming from behind the cloud. It's clearing. I'm sorry, I'm so excited. Oh,
no.
I can see it. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness, it's so beautiful.
Describe it.
People are just so excited here. The cloud has moved away, and you can see the perfect moon over the sun. You can see, oh my goodness, it's just beautiful, the totality here in Carbondale.
Jennifer, hold your phone out. Hold your phone out, Jennifer. Let us hear. Well, of course, that's when they got quiet.
Can you hear, of course, right?
Yes, yeah, right.
Taking a breath now.
No, we
so
hear them.
Now they just saw the diamond ring.
Oh,
totality is over here. So we got to see some of totality, and now immediately it starts getting a little bit lighter and
wow.
a little bit lighter. But we definitely did see that diamond ring that the astronomers talk about.
So the change is so quickly. As soon as that little sliver of sun comes back, it just gets lighter.
We can see the snakes on the ground.
The snakes on the ground?
That they talk about. We can see them, yes.
Snakes are on the ground. You
yes.
mean light.
light. The light, it was shimmering for a moment, and now it's starting to fade away as the sun's light gets lighter. Brighter, I should say. I'm just so excited about this.
Well, how is your heart? I mean, tell us more about that. We're going to bring in Jeff Brumfield, who'll tell us a little more about that light that's on the ground and the ring that you saw. But how is your heart?
It's just beating so crazy because that it's something that I never expected to see. And everyone who has seen one before has told me you're never prepared for something like this.
But Carbondale's going to get another one. Carbondale's going to get another totality in 2024.
Yeah, that's right, in 2024. And the totality is going to be longer for that one, too. So I know a lot of people are already making their plans to be here in 7 years to see it again.
I want to stay with you because so it hasn't yet moved out, right? Or has it started to?
Right.
So you're not.
The totality is over, but we can just see a tiny sliver of the sun
coming back. And those ripples of light, they say it's like the sunshine when you look at the bottom of a pool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can see it on, maybe a car or a sheet of ground. There's
right.
There might be atmospheric turbulence, but we're going to bring Jeff in and ask what that is. But how many people have experienced this together in that place where you are?
Oh, there are easily 20,000 people here.
Wow.
Because
wow.
there are at least 15,000 in the stadium, and I'm standing with thousands more outside.
What an experience. Well, thank you so much. Jennifer Fuller there from WSIU in Carbondale, Illinois. And boy, now you know. Do you have that feeling that they say since Carbondale's getting another one in 2024, do you feel like you have to see this again?
Yes, absolutely, without a doubt. Even if I'm not, in the current spot. So.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're about 2 minutes away from totality in Nashville.
In Nashville, okay.
Now, so let's bring in Jeff Brumfield, again, who's been guiding NPR's coverage of this event. Did I get that right, that snakes on the ground?
I thought we were just referring to a new movie, right?
I like it. I think you should get working on the screenplay here.
Well,
it's got potential.
Well, NASA says atmospheric turbulence, maybe how light passes through layers of the atmosphere. But this is
that's right. I mean, there's a lot of optics, that strange optics that happens around an eclipse. I mean, literal optics, like physical optics. Trees can act as pinholes and project the eclipse onto the ground, and you can get this atmospheric sort of
twinkling. Stand under a tree and you'll see it come through the leaves, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, that's my memory of a annular eclipse that passed over my hometown in the 1990s. I don't remember much of it except for seeing those projections all over the ground. So, yeah, it's an interesting time to see.
To
the
say
sun.
The least.
Well, yeah. So hang on here for just a second, because let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. And Chaz Sisk is there, reporter with WPLN. And please, we've been hearing about cloud cover elsewhere. We're pulling for you there in Nashville, Chaz.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you, we just had a large cloud move in front of the sign. It served as a natural filter just before totality, so you could see a nice little fingernail crescent, but it's beginning to grow dark. I'm getting a 360-degree sunset, like they're saying. It's just purple all around the horizon. Looking to the north, the downtown, I can see the lights beginning to come on. And what I'm seeing right now are planes, not quite the stars. It's beginning to grow dark here, like sunset.
Well, so you're still getting the dark, as we've been hearing in other spots. Missouri was one, not you can't see the black disk covering the sun that's 400 miles away from it, which is still astonishing to me. Oh, but maybe
no, unfortunately not. I can see right now. I think I see Venus emerging, higher than you'd ever see it in the night sky, just right. right in line with just off from the moon and the sun.
Well, that's wacky.
Yeah, and if you listen, you hear people cheering. It's basically like a dusk falling on the city right now.
Yeah, this is at the Adventure Science Center there in Nashville. How many people? What's the crowd been like?
It's a good crowd. They were saying as many as 10,000 they were planning for. There's probably not quite that many people here. There are people coming from all over. I've interviewed somebody who came here from Mexico. He had seen the eclipse in 84 there and wanted to bring his family here as an adult to see it. I've interviewed a couple people from California, a couple people from Cincinnati. I've got a nice family here that's here from Cincinnati standing by, hoping to tell you a little bit about it. So we've had a lot of people come into town for this.
Well, and we want to talk to that family. But you're also beside the interstate. Are you seeing people do what authorities in many cities thought they might do, just pull over?
Yeah, no, for the most part, people are continuing to drive on by. I don't see anybody stopping
along
the interstate. So,
during a solar eclipse?
I
said, how can you drive during totality?
Yeah, I know. I think people maybe have the good sense not to just stop in the middle of the interstate. But
cicadas.
I'm the crickets come out.
Oh, the crickets.
Cicadas.
Yeah, they don't come out, I bet, till later in the day. Normally.
No, but that's what it would sound like at nighttime here in Nashville usually. So
that's
something we'd never hear at midday.
Wow.
That's wild. Well, you have a family that you said that came from Cincinnati. Is it Amit Chitness?
Yeah, Amit Chitness is here. So I'll introduce you to him.
Hi, this is Amit.
Amit, I understand you saw a partial eclipse in India in the 1990s. Now, I know you're having a little cloud cover here, but you just heard crickets and cicadas in the middle of the day. What's it like there?
This is total surreal. I mean, this is the first time I'm using that word, surreal experience, but this is what it is. I mean, whatever we saw so far, 90%, more than 90% of the sun was covered by moon. It was just awesome. It was just amazing. We're just hoping that the cloud will move away and we can get to a part of that totality, can experience that part of that totality. But right now what we are seeing is magical. It's the middle of the day. It was hot and it has cooled down and it's dark. It's just amazing. It's just an amazing experience.
The sound of the cicadas is amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, some places do have cicadas in the day, but apparently not in Nashville, as we just heard from Chaz Sisk. You're from Cincinnati, but does this feel like a communal thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there are almost 10,000 people here. Majority of the people are with family. I see the little kids playing in the background, and then some of the little kids are in the stroller, some of them taking a nap. But this is definitely, there's a communal feeling to it.
Yes. I know you have a 10-year-old there, just starting fifth grade. Is there a chance we can speak to Rishi?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I
want to
rock.
Oh, a little nervous, but yeah, we're putting some headphones on him. Can you hear him okay?
Hi, Rishi.
Yeah, I can hear.
Excellent. What's it like there for you?
It's like... It's really getting really fun.
It's dark.
Why? Yeah.
It's dark, and you've got bugs making noise that don't make noise till nighttime. But do you have glasses on, by the way?
No. My glasses. I've taken off my glasses because it's not sunny anymore.
Yeah, and you're in totality, so you're allowed to do that. So
you've
taken them off. That's good. And I know you were looking at YouTube videos with your siblings. And what's your feeling about what's happening, that the moon is blocking the sun?
It's like it's getting darker and darker by the minute. And it's like it's getting really, really dark.
Is it scary?
No, I'm not scared of anything. Not even dark.
Well, Rishi Chitness, thank you so much. Why don't you pass us back to... thank you. Let's pass us back to Chaz Sisk there
here,
in Nashville.
Yes.
So you got a chorus of bugs there.
Yeah.
Can you tell if you're coming out of totality? I hear excitement.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely coming out of totality now. It's probably about 50%. Lighter than it was just maybe a minute or so ago, and the wind is starting to pick up again with the sun coming back out. So there's definitely that stillness that was described by the reporter in Carbondale, like right beforehand, and then the wind starts to pick up again. So it's beginning to people are beginning to pack up and and move on, but it's in the bugs are quieting down again. So
listen to that.
So wrapping up.
Unbelievable.
Amazing. Hearing the cicadas was a real treat. Mm-hmm. Chas Sisk, Nashville, Tennessee, reporter of WPLN, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, let's move on to Kentucky now, Hopkinsville, Kentucky, where Here and Now's own astronomer Kelly Beatty with Sky and Telescope magazine is there. Kelly, you took 200 people to Hopkinsville.
I did, and we totally scored. It was a beautiful day here. We had a little high cirrus cloud, but we could see the moon's shadow coming from Missoula, as they say down here, and it enveloped us. We had 200 very happy people. Our group is from all over the world. We have teams from families from Europe and Qatar and Hong Kong and New Zealand, lots of people from Canada, and they're all fresh from having stood in the moon's shadow. It's just amazing.
Well, so what was totality like? I mean, what did you see?
Well, we saw, I have a small, well, my eye is so amazing because really, you can imagine how ancient peoples would have been scared senseless because as totality approaches, the light gets weird and it gets dim. You know that something is going on and you don't think to look at the sun. And then you can see the moon's shadow approaching at supersonic speeds and it's racing toward you. It looks like a thunderstorm on the horizon. It overwhelms you. You look up in the sky and where the sun had been is a black bullet hole. And, you know, you've seen pictures of the corona, but they don't do it justice because the actual corona is electric white. It is such a stunning sight. We saw Venus and Jupiter in the sky, and weirdly, we saw a lot of jet planes contrails just as totality was happening.
Wow. How big is the corona when you see it?
Yeah, so it actually extends out two or three times the diameter of the sun itself.
Okay.
And the problem is that most people, they're so excited, they want to see the diamond ring and Daly's beads and the last little bit of sun disappear by eye. What you lose with that is the little bit of dark adaptation that would allow you to see all of the extent. So I try to, like, hide my eyes so I can see the most I can. And you know, two or three times the sun's diameter is about what most people see.
Well, Kelly, I'm going to ask you a question, and you may not, you know, it's in your wheelhouse, but you may not be able to picture it. We're getting tweets, of course, and texts from people all across the country. And my cousin in Vermont, who, by the way, said that the holding up the spaghetti colander did not work for her daughter. So that maybe it's working better in some places than other where you hold up the colander it goes
probably
to...
because the holes were too big.
Could be. Okay. But she says about 15 minutes ago, so I don't know if you... What planet is this with so many moons? Can you see a planet with moons?
No. So Jupiter is in the eastern part of the sky, and it might be visible from Boston or where the eclipse is deep, but it's if you look at Jupiter with a pair of binoculars or a good telescope, you will see that it has at least four moons. That's the only other planet in the sky right now that has a lot of moons. Saturn is in the evening sky, so it has to be either Jupiter or Venus. I'm betting on Jupiter.
Thank you.
How long was totality in Hopkinsville, Kentucky? Because you thought it was going to be the longest in the country, right?
It is the longest in the country. I have a technical scientific assessment for you, Meghna. It was too short. We have, you know, some of us have timers and we know when it's half over and 30 seconds left and stuff. But you're really gripped by what's going on, not only in the sky above you, but in the sky around you. And it's just hard to let it all sink in. It takes kind of a practice eye to, like, you know, oh, I have to go look for this and now I have to go look for this. Everyone here was so excited. We have five bus drivers who were lucky enough to bring us out here, and they were hovering around me looking through my scope. They are going home with stories to tell, let me tell you.
Well, Kelly, stay there for a second because we're going to hear them, you know, on our program down the road. But I want to bring Jeff Brumfield back. He's been guiding NPR's coverage of this big event. And Jeff, we want to remind people, you know, this is radio, of course, but we have got pictures at NPR.org that are stunning.
Absolutely. We have a lovely little live blog going if you head over to NPR.org, and we've got all your tweets and pictures and photos, and we'll have more as the day goes on. So if you miss the eclipse or you're not in the path of totality, there'll be plenty to see.
Okay. And what, you know, as we are making our way, we were talking about this morning, where does it go? I mean, it goes through the Carolinas. Where does it go?
After the Carolinas?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it goes out over the Atlantic Ocean. It actually goes quite a ways out into the Atlantic. Now, I had a look earlier in the week, late last week. Doesn't look like it hits any more islands or anything like that. There is a Princess cruise ship out there with Bonnie Tyler on it. And she's going to be singing Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yes. Jeff Rumfield, and he's guiding NPR's coverage of this big event. And he's going to be our sort of a, you know, mate helping us through the day. We've got about a minute left. Kelly Beatty, Sky and Telescope Magazine. They're in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. One thing you'd tell people who have totality ahead of them.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get
What's
that,
What's the
Robin?
One thing you'd tell somebody, you know, to look for, to think about?
Don't worry about photographing it. Look with your own eyes. Imagine that you are literally standing in the moon's shadow. And I'm sorry, Jeffrey, I am a big fan of I'm being followed by a moon shadow by Cat Stevens.
And we've also been talking about Here Comes the Sun. I mean, the music that comes from our planets. Kelly Beatty, Sky and Telescope Magazine, Jeff Brumfield, thank you both so much. This is NPR's special coverage of the total eclipse of the sun. And we'll continue it in just a couple minutes.
This is special coverage from NPR News as the total eclipse of 2017. The Great American Eclipse is making its way to South Carolina. So it's now in the eastern part of the country before heading off into the Atlantic. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Robin Young. And we also are joined by Leslie McClurg from the science desk at KQED in San Francisco. Leslie, you had an extraordinary event there this morning in San Francisco. As you've been watching the total eclipse grow across the country, we're understanding that, you know, nature is nature. And, you know, the universe is like clockwork, but can't plan for things like clouds and rain.
Absolutely. I mean, I think as I've talked to, they're called eclipse chasers or umbrophiles. These are shadow lovers who have chased the eclipse. You know, they chase it all over the globe. These happen about every 18 months. They talk about that. That's part of this phenomenon is you never really know if you're actually going to see it. And if the clouds sort of descend on you or the rain descends on you, as we saw in Missouri. Yeah. So you never really know. Hopefully it happens, and I think maybe that's part of the awe. And I did talk to
Leslie. Can I just jump in here for a second? I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I do want to move to South Carolina because we actually have Laura Hunsenberger, reporter with South Carolina Public Radio. Totality is just, I don't know, 30 seconds away, Laura?
Yes. If you can hear the crowd cheering, it's because we're about to see the diamond ring on the sun now. It's about to go completely dark. The sky around us has, darkness has fallen here in South Carolina. There's thousands of people here at the South Carolina State Museum. It just began to look like nighttime.
Let us hear. Let us hear, Laura. Hold your phone out. Oh, wow. What are people saying? Is there language? Is it just screams? Well, of course, she held her phone out, so she can... Laura? Okay, we'll just listen.
If you can hear, you can hear that, the corona of the sun just came out, and it is really breathtaking. I can't believe how cool it actually looks, now that I'm seeing it myself.
Are people saying anything, or is it just sounds like screams?
There's a lot of young children who are screaming, a lot of folks trying to get pictures. It's people are kind of overwhelmed.
Well, tell
by
us more
what they're seeing.
When you said the corona of the sun looks breathtaking, why? What is it that you're seeing that's taking your breath away?
There's a ring around the sun, and really the diamond ring was when people started really screaming because it was quite it looks like something that you would see in a science fiction movie. It's glowing, it's a white almost like an LED quality of light around the moon.
How dark is the rest of the sky?
The sky around us, it looks like twilight. Because of the clouds, I'm not able to see any of the 360-degree sunset, but right now it does look like, I would say, probably around 10 at night on a summer night.
Wow.
There's a little bit of light. We also have some bleed from the museum, but it is quite dark. We don't have any wildlife around, but... it is. Folks around me are saying that they hear birds freaking out.
Really?
In the trees nearby, yes.
Well, and that is supposed to happen as well. Now we know why. I mean, do you feel now, can you understand why, you know, in the past, you know, Mayans thought that the earth was about to divide and jaguars would come out of the earth to eat people? Or, you know, others thought the Incas thought that the moon was whispering into the sun's ear, you know.
And the myths of it being eaten by a frog and things. It does look, I would say, supernatural. It looks like something that I wouldn't believe is real if I weren't seeing it with my own eyes.
Yeah. I understand you have a scientist with you, Melvin Fur?
I do. I have Melvin Farabee from NASA here with me.
We'd love to talk to him.
I can put him on the phone now.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm fine. How are you? What was it like for you?
Oh, this is so cool. This is the coolest thing ever.
Describe it.
It's a big black disc with a really white collar, and I guess we just finished the period of totality, so it looks like a great big flashlight just slowly coming back on.
Wow.
And now everyone's starting to put their glasses back on. If I look behind me, the clouds just have this surreal lighting from the top and from the side. It's really a sight to see.
Hmm. And by the way, have you seen them before?
The last time I saw one of these, I was in the fifth grade in 1970.
Oh, wow.
What's the difference?
I can understand now. I can actually look up at the sky and not feel like my eyes are going to burn out of my body.
Right.
And then being an engineer now, I've got the science background to understand what all is going on.
But it sounds like it doesn't feel any less spectacular as it did when you were in fifth grade.
Absolutely. I'm just like a child now. I am geeking out so much on this.
Well, and, you know, we're also getting a little sad because totality is going to end in the last populated place in North America in, I think it's McClellanville, South Carolina, in 4 minutes. In 4 minutes, it's, you know, then it's going to go to the Cape Romaine National Wildlife Refuge and then into the Atlantic. It's almost over. Is there some sadness, too?
It's a little melancholy because I don't think I'll be around for the next one. But
it's only 7 years away. The next one's 2024. Come on.
You're right.
Well, Melvin, thank you. And what are people doing there now? Is the sun coming back out? You said it's like a flashlight.
Yeah, they're all out and they're high-fiving and still looking at the sun. You know, you get the second half now as the moon moves away.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing it with us. Thank Laura Hunsberger with South Carolina Public Radio there at the South Carolina State Museum. What a wonderful pair to describe this to us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. Well, you already did.
Hey, Leslie McClurg and at KQED at the science desk there. I mean, we should just remind everyone, this is a very special eclipse because it's transiting across the entire United States, the continental United States here, the lower 48, I should say. But, you know, technically speaking, there's an eclipse somewhere, what, every 18 months or so?
Exactly. Every 18 months, it happens somewhere on the planet. But if you stayed in the same spot, it would only happen every 300 to 400 years. So eclipse chasers go run around and try to catch them every 18 months. And it hasn't happened like this, where it goes from the West Coast to the East Coast all the way across the country for about 99 years.
Wow.
So this is pretty rare. The one coming up that you mentioned in 2024 is going to go north-south or south-north. And so, you know, we'll see it, but not the whole country.
Well, just going to be very sad, I think, to have it suddenly go. So stay right there. I want to bring in Brian Brewer, an eclipse historian, avid eclipse watcher, author of the book Eclipse. He updated it in advance of today. We've spoken to him on the program. Brian, watching from Sun Valley, Idaho, how was it for you?
It was fabulous. Is this Robin I'm talking to?
Yeah, hi. And Magnus here, too.
Hi, Robin.
Yeah.
Yes, we had fantastic. We came up to the top of Bald Mountain at a height of about elevation of about 9,000 feet, and about 1,000 people up here, and it was just spectacular. perfectly clear sky here, which was a real blessing.
Well, you remind us of how past peoples have looked at this. You know, Columbus tricked Jamaicans into feeding him by telling
right.
them he would make the moon disappear if they didn't.
He did.
I was reminded over the weekend, Mark Twain, you know, in his Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, Hank, the guy who goes back in time, he saves his life initially anyway because he predicts this thing, this awesome, you know, event because he knew that it had happened in that time. And so he was able to predict it in Mark Twain's story. Tell us just a little bit more. Did you feel connected to some of those stories and some of those ancient beliefs?
During the eclipse, not so much. But in the lead up to it, however, when we could see the sun, you know, gradually getting covered by the moon, and start, you know, as it started to get dark and cooler in the last 5 or 10 minutes, I did think about what someone might have thought about this if they didn't know that it was happening, didn't have that advanced
right.
knowledge, and it would have been frightening.
Well, and tell us more about what happened there in Sun Valley. I know those hotel rooms were completely sold out.
Oh, yes. Well, it was a very typical eclipse experience. People gathered beforehand, and when we had first contact about an hour and 20 minutes before totality, kind of a cheer went up, and then people slowly, you know, monitored the progress of the moon across the face of the sun, and then, you know, it all started to come to a climax about 5 or 10 minutes beforehand. It started to get dark and cold up here, and then when totality burst into view, it was just, you know, cheer went up, and just it was a culmination of a lot of anticipation.
Well,
I think it was a release of a lot of stress.
Well thank you.
For me.
well, thank you for being there. And share just a couple more things. Your stories were incredible. Not just, you know, fiction or mythology, what people believed, but Einstein's theory of relativity was proven during an eclipse.
Yes, exactly. You know, he postulated that light would be bent by gravity. And so he, even after he postulated this, he realized that a total eclipse would be the way to test this. And so after several false starts in the late 1919 or whatever, finally in 1923, they got the right measurements, and it was the first empirical proof of the theory of relativity.
Yeah. And wars suddenly ended, perhaps because of total solar eclipse. Can you imagine?
Oh, yes.
You're on the battlefield.
Yeah, this is such an awesome sight, and it's so unexpected if you didn't know about it in advance. It would take your breath away and make you think that something strange was happening.
Yeah. Just share one more story with us the book is terrific, and just share one more story about, you know, eclipse past as this one passes across America.
Well, Robin, I'll share this one with you that I've been telling in some of the lectures I've been giving. I was with a group on a cruise ship in 1998 in the Caribbean, and right after totality, there was a woman who was on was on the deck of the cruise ship. I think she was either Swedish or German, but she was wandering around, kind of saying to no one and everyone, saying, "That was better than sex. That was better than sex."
Did we mention this is NPR's coverage?
Family-friendly radio.
hey. But, you know, there's some truth to that because scientists have been studying this emotion of awe, which people experience when they see totality, and it has similar physiological effects.
Well, and that's what we're hearing.
That's all I'll say.
Brian Brewer, eclipse historian, and his book, Eclipse, has been reissued because of today's event. Brian, thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you, Robin.
He's there in Sun Valley,
bye-bye.
Idaho. But we want to check back in with our friend, poet and author Ron Rash. If you weren't with us at the beginning of our coverage, we started in Oregon. He talked about how he'd been commissioned to write a poem of anticipation, and he shared that poem with us, what he anticipated it would be. He's been viewing the eclipse from Western Carolina University in Cullowhee, North Carolina. Totality, we understand, ended there about 10, 15 minutes ago. Ron, what'd you think?
Well, this is one of those situations as a writer, you feel overwhelmed, and I know that whatever I say would be a failure. So I think we start there, but there was a really, it was just a fascinating, I actually went off by myself for a few moments, but then I went back to where other people were, and I thought there was a sense of wonder in both places.
Yeah, and yet we'd asked you to maybe, if you could keep your hand from shaking, write a new poem. The one that you wrote was Anticipation. Now that you'd seen it, we thought, well, maybe you could write a new one. What happened?
Well, 20 minutes is a very short time to try to write a poem. But what was interesting was I started off with an image. I kind of thought as I watched it a little bit of you know, the sun being like a gold coin that disappears, is gone, and
magic.
Then there it is.
It's a sleight
kind of
hand.
The moon's best magic trick. But then I thought that's all wrong because I'm diminishing it by putting it in human terms. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stick with the last line of the poem I read earlier, the wonder of day and night become one.
Yeah. And we understand that part of the, just as we'd read, there were people who couldn't keep their hands from shaking to write, that it was, you were overwhelmed by the awe.
I really was, and what was really wonderful was the sense that went rippled through all of us out there. There was silence, and I think something, a sense that the world is greater than we can imagine, and I think probably it would be a great thing if we had that sense of wonder about the world every day.
Well, we know you've got a freshman with you there, Austin Ross. Can we just, for 1 second, speak?
Well, Austin is supposed to be here, but evidently the eclipse has so overawed him that he has not come up here. But
well, he's one of many then, and we're so glad that you got to see it. Some parts of the country, you know, it was eclipsed by clouds. Ron Rash, thank you so much for your thoughts today. And I want to thank you, Ron.
Okay, thank you.
There in North Carolina. And I want to bring back Bruce Feiler.
Yeah, let's do that.
Bruce, are you there?
I'm here.
And where are you?
I'm on Tybee Island, where we've just passed totality.
And?
Well, we were talking in the last hour about how basically we need all of our faculties to bring together to appreciate a moment of awe and wonder like this, science, math, spirituality, religion, awe. And I have just witnessed the perfect scene that captures this. A group of about, I'm overlooking Tybee Island Beach, okay, which is sort of almost the westernmost spot of the east coast of the United States. And it's actually a bit cloudy here. We heard lots of frogs and birds and high winds and a little bit of rain actually during totality. And I just watched 12 nuns in full white habit gather together on a boardwalk in a circle as totality passed over here. And I thought, if this isn't exactly what we've been talking about, everybody can appreciate this, and you need all of your faculties, and it really is this thing that takes us all out to a special place, out of our place, and both, you know, in our frame of mind at the same time. It was exquisitely beautiful.
Well, and of course, you write about spirituality in your New York Times column and in your many books. And we were talking about, you know, this is a spiritual moment. It's also a scientific moment, but science can be spiritual. As my science major buddy Meghna knows, studied many science courses. Bruce, what about your family?
Well, we were all out there. I have to say, it was something. This is a house my family has been in since 1965, and someone, we had 14 people out there from age 12 to age 82, all gathered around eating eclipse donuts and listening to a soundtrack that played through the entire event. And someone said, "I'm not sure we've ever been out on this deck together." And to me, that really does capture this. You know, what an eclipse is to me is it's something that's really out of the ordinary, that really almost invites us, maybe even obliges us to think about our place in the universe. To me, it inspires humility, and of course, we all need that right now. You know, it encourages us to connect with our neighbors. We've all been having these conversations, and we certainly need that now. And we each get to tell our own story about it, and that to me is what it's about, right? This is the first eclipse of the digital age, right? We've had all this information, but in the end, we all have to come up with our own story and tell what happened to us. So to me, it is a scientific event, but also a spiritual event, a moment of humility and awe.
Yeah.
And it feels like exactly what the world needed right now.
Bruce Feiler, thank
you. So beautifully put. Let's turn back for a couple seconds to Leslie McClurg at the KQED Science Desk. You just heard what Bruce said. I mean, take that forward. What do you hope to learn from this eclipse?
scientists are really excited to study what we can't normally see, which is the sun's atmosphere, the white disk that everyone's talking about around the moon that's blocking out what we can normally see of the sun. We can't usually see the corona in this atmosphere, and so scientists are really excited to study that. The storms that happen up there, the storms that happen there can influence our own satellites, our own radiation, can influence the power grid. So there's a lot of information that the science world is super excited about, as well as they've been satiated spiritually.
Leslie McClurg from KQED in San Francisco. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Well,
it's been amazing.
It has.
It really
an amazing
has.
Couple hours. And with that, NPR's special coverage of the total eclipse of 2017 comes to an end. Don't forget, amazing photographs at NPR.org. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're looking forward to 2024 now.
Yeah, we're there.
You're listening to NPR.